So good morning, everybody, and welcome to ITE 2, Module 3 even. Now, and we're going to bypass the quiz today. But I'll have one for you at the end if I can find the quiz. We're having a fun morning here. Okay, so today we're talking... You cannot hear me?
That's better.
Okay, all right. All right, so we're talking about the physical components of a network. So first thing we want to talk about is your network interface card. A lot of people will probably have had their hands on a network interface card at some stage or other, but it plugs into your system board and it provides ports by which the network, for your network even, I'll try and say, media connections. So it interfaces with your local area network, and when you've got a network interface cards installed in your computer, which we hope you have, the IRQ and the IO addresses and memory space for the operating system drivers are set automatically for them.
What's the thing? What's the subsystem called that automatically sets? No, the DMA, the IRQ and the IO port. What's the funky thing that sets those?
Plug and play?
Yeah, that's what I wanted. Plug and play. There is a plug and play component in the BIOS, and there is a plug and play component in the operating system. And they are responsible for automatic resource allocation, which is a techie way of saying the DMA, the IRQ and the EO port. Okay, and the ISA cards use ISA plug and play, or ISPNT if you're using the speech synthesizer, and PCI. Yeah, and the PCI ones have the. Now I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this once very, 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 very specifically. PCI card resources are allocated by the BIOS. Don't ever forget that. You can't change them in the operating system. They're allocated by the BIOS, he says, virtually thumping the desk. So PCI resources are allocated by the BIOS, and that is where you look to change the resource allocations if you need to. But in theory, you shouldn't have to. There we go. I'm just off my soapbox now. I'll try not to slip off and do myself some damage. But, and the ISA ones are allocated by the BIOS and then by the operating system. So that's how their DMA, IRQs and IO ports are allocated. And because we've got a lot of lecture notes to get through, I won't tell you stories of what it used to be like to set up network cards. But suffice it to say that there were lots of jumpers and things that you had to set before you even put the board into the computer, which meant you had to read the book before you tore it out of its anti-static bag and cut sick with it. Of course, all you do now is you just get your D-Link card and you insert it into the slot, and it doesn't work. I mean, that's the sort of reliability that we're after these days.
It doesn't work? Okay. Okay. So when you're actually looking at selecting a network interface card for use on your network, anyone... think of some of the things you might need to think about in your selection.
Up media and connector types.
Yep, that's good. Anyone else?
Around to help you read the book.
Sorry, I missed that.
Compatible with your operating system.
Mm-hmm. Also things like the... type of network that you're going to use it on, whether it's an Ethernet LAN, FDDI, that type of thing, or this type of system bus as well. So they're all things you have to consider when you're looking at the type of NIC that you're going to use. You should not want to get nicked by a NIC. Okay, so. All right, this is going to sound like a repeat of CCNA now. Setting the IP address. Duh. Okay. Trevor, you thought you missed out on CCNA. Okay, so when you have a TCP/IP based local area network, the PC you're using uses an internet protocol or IP address, and it does that to identify and locate each other. So an IP address is a something bit binary number. Who wants to tell me?
32.
48.
Thank you, Gemma. No, 32-bit. And that binary number, a binary number gets divided into four groups, which we of 8 bits. Anyone know what we call those four groups of 8 bits? Thank you, Trevor. Trevor got that. That was octets. It's correct. Thanks, Chris. And each of those is represented by a decimal number in the range of zero. There's a new number, 0 to 255. And the octets are actually separated by a decimal point. So if anyone's been in to configure the IP address, you'll have had to put those numbers in the four octets. So an example of your IP address. Anyone want to give me an example? Yes. I was sort of just thinking like along the lines of, you know, 190.100.5.54, something like that. Something simple. Yeah, that's right. Whatever you like, whatever floats your boat. And when you have that type of address, it's described as a dotted decimal number, and each device that you have on your network that has an IP address, we also refer to as a node. So if we're talking as a host or a node, what we're talking about. There is another secondary dotted decimal number that we refer to as the subnet mask, and you always have a subnet mask with your IP. So it's used by, say for example, a system network address that has been assigned to your network. And that allows, well, subnetting allows the entire network to be represented to the internet by or as one address. And what would that be? A class somethings for somebody who's already...
And what's the range of class C IP addresses for whoever's on fire there? What if there's a range of the first octet of class C IP addresses? Yeah, that's... Yeah, 191 to 223. So you were close. Almost got it. Yeah, they end at 223. 224 is multicast, but we don't talk about that.
Okay. So the subnet mask's also used if we wanted to determine whether a particular host IP address is local, and by that I just mean whether it's on the same network segment, or if it's remote, and by that I mean it's on another segment. So you've got a number of options when you are assigning IP address for your hosts on a local area network. You can assign them statically. Anyone want to tell me what I mean by static addressing?
An IP address that stays the same.
And that will be a chocolate cake with icing sugar for Leon. Yes. And why does it stay the same? We've got a local answer that says because it's static, which is all very self-referential. But why is the static address, why does it stay the same?
Statically assigned by the administrator.
Yeah, that's right. You set it, therefore it stays the same. It's the thug in front of the keyboard has typed in the IP address. What's one of the problems with static IP address allocation? We have a local answer that you can get. Yes, the thug can type in the wrong thing.
Typing.
Better just not go into CCNA Discovery 2 because your fingers will fall off.
And Prakash, you were right with your answer too. Okay, another way that you can assign IP addresses is dynamically. Okay, guys, who wants to have a go at that one?
We want a remote answer. We've got a local one. Obtain automatically, yeah, with what? What's the thing called that lets you obtain them automatically?
DHCP server.
Well done. Dancer or a RARP sample server, but you are correct with your DHCP server. But boot and RARP are other automatic address allocation protocols. So it looks like Eddie gets the second chocolate cake with icing on it.
And automatically is another option for private IP addressing. Okay, all right. Yes, it is too.
IPA, automatic private IP address allocation, automatic private IP address allocation, a PIPA, automatic private IP address allocation. It's where your network card automatically generates a private IP address on the 169.254 subnet using the bytes in the MAC address to key the IP address value. So you need to know that. A PIPA, automatic private IP address allocation, and it is in the final exam. So, yeah.
It is in your final exam.
It does happen when DHCP is not present, although that behaviour can be disabled. You can actually turn off IP auto-configuration, which will disable a PIPA from working. But yes, normally it does happen when DHCP servers are unavailable. And it's pretty cruddy, and nobody particularly likes it very much, and it doesn't work very well. But IPv6, which we don't talk about yet, has a much nicer method of IP address allocation that can assign link local addresses, which are based on the MAC address of your card. So there you go. But a PIPA is there, and it does work, but we don't like it much, so watch out for it. If you see it, if it comes up with 169.254, you may want to check your network configuration settings or hit that repair button in the network diagnostic screen under Windows XP if that's what you're running.
Okay, so we just talked a little bit about DHCP a moment ago, so another way for a PIDA, as we mentioned, to on a network to obtain an IP address is through DHCP or a Dynamic Host Control Protocol. And that's a software utility, and that automatically assigns IP addresses to your PC. And the computer that, if you're in a network that's running the software, is known as the DHCP server. So it assigns the IP addresses and the TCP/IP configuration information to the computers that are configured as the DHCP clients. And it eliminates the need for manually inputting IP addresses. And if you can imagine in a network situation, you've got lots and lots of computers out there, client computers, and if you're going around having to manually assign all the IP addresses, you're probably going to go bonkers by the end of the process. So, but you do sometimes need to put in static addresses as well, and then in that case...
Servers.
And, yeah, we've got another local answer. Anybody else remote know the other one? Servers is correct. What else needs static addresses? What about routers? I think a dynamic router would be a bit funky. And printers. Yep, switches if they have management. Yes, although you can assign switch addresses via DHCP if you want to. That is acceptable behaviour if you want to do it that way. But, yeah, routers, switches, printers and servers would probably want static IP addresses. The other time you would want static IP addresses, oh, torrenters of the world, is if you are forwarding ports to your box. You don't want the IP address changing or all of the port forwards will break and you'll have to reboot your D-Link router.
So when you... actually got the server set up with DHCP, it gets a request from each of the hosts, and it then selects or pulls out, and like a rabbit out of a hat, an IP address information, and it does that from a set of predefined addresses that it has, and they're stored in the server on a database. So once it gets the or decides on which IP information, it then gives those values to the requesting device that's on the network. And then hopefully the device accepts that, and the DHCP server then leases the IP information to the specific device. And that's usually for a period of time, and the next time, and turn it back on, and then it'll reassign another lease. So the IP address information that your DHCP server assigns to each of the hosts would be an IP address, a subnet mask, a default gateway. So it may optional values such as your DNS server address. So it makes it a much easier process.
I think you may have to shift that microphone a bit closer to your mouth, Geraldine. You're just not triggering it slightly. No, you're not micing up there for some reason. I'm not sure what's going on there. So you can basically end up with, No, we're not hearing you. I don't know why. You can assign the IP address, the subnet mask, the default gateway. You can obviously assign name servers, time servers, WIN servers, and various other pieces of information. It is very tricky to assign the host name via DHCP under Windows, although other operating systems will support that. Let's see if Geraldine's working again. Geraldine's audio's gone west. Oh, I don't have any more notes. I can't remember what's next. So
testing 1, 2, 3, 4. No, I'm not. I'm here. Okay, so you've got me now. Yep. Okay, no worries. Okay, so as I mentioned, that the DHCP using DHCP makes things a lot easier. Also, automatically, when you're automatically configuring the TCP IP, it reduces the possibility of getting duplicate IP addresses or, alternatively, invalid IP addresses. Anyone want to have a go at sort of describing how you'd go in and manually assign an IP address? Feeling dastardly.
Anyone? Yeah, you could.
Of the network connection.
Mm-hmm. What do you do to assign the IP address and the properties of a network connection?
You pull up the properties of the network connection and you go to TCP IP and you pull up the properties of it and you put your IP address in and press OK.
You do. But how do you actually get to the properties of the internet? How do you get to the properties of the internet connection, like the connection you want to modify under, say, Windows XP?
You can get the properties of My Network Places with Alt Enter, or you can go into Control Panel and go into Network Connections.
That's what I wanted. And although you can go start run cpanel/qpzp$network foo foo baba, nobody ever remembers all that stuff, so you look smart when you do it once, and then the second time you can't remember the commands, you end up going through the GUI. So, but you are right, you can go start run and those sorts of things. But me, I think start settings control panel is 3 keystrokes, and it would probably be quicker than actually going into start run. Although, I was looking at Vista yesterday, and that little edit box in the start menu is pretty cool. There are lots of other things about Vista that aren't very cool, but the fact that you can sort of go start and then key in device manager, and up it'll come. Yes, I know you can go start run devmgmt.msc under older versions of Windows, but the actual type what you want into the little box under Vista feature is kind of cool.
Interesting, we're all finding out about Vista a little bit more today. We have many notes. How are you liking yours, Gemma?
Getting there, putting Vista back to normal and getting it all set up has taken a lot longer than I would have anticipated.
Lovely keyboard, so. Okay, so when you've got a large-scale sort of local area network, if you were trying to remember all the IP addresses of your hosts, you'd go absolutely mad. But so we have the hosts identified by sort of computer names or host names. And the DNS, which stands for Domain Name System, it's used to translate the computer name. So, for example, if you've got www.google.com, it translates it to a unique IP address. The software that DNS uses runs on your computer or on the computer as a network server, and it just translates those addresses that you put in. It can be hosted on the network by itself or by an ISP, Internet Service Provider, and the address translation is actually used each time you go on the internet and access it. When we talk about the process of translating those names to their addresses, we call that name resolution.
That is called the name resolver. In case you ever come across that in the later Linux bits, you will be configuring the name resolver on your Linux machine later in the course. Don't know whether anybody's already downloaded the practical exam, which I think is still up online on the QCAT site. But if you do, if you do download the practical exam, it'll give you some idea of what the practical is going to look like at the end of the module. One of our students did and was a little bit awed by the stuff in the practical exam. To achieve the practical exam at the end of the course.
All right. Your DNS server keeps records that maps your host names to their corresponding IP addresses, and those record types are then combined in the DNS table. So when you have a host name that needs to be translated to its IP address, the client then contacts the DNS server, and you have a number of or a hierarchy of DNS servers on the internet, and they've all got different servers and they all maintain their DNS information for their own areas of authority. Those areas of authority are referred to as zones, and if the DNS server is consulted by a computer and it doesn't have an IP mapping for the host name that's being sought, it then passes the query along to another DNS server and on until it gets the information it needs.
Looking up, for example, we want to find the name of the machine that has the IP address of the host name that says donuts.chrisleg.com.au. We first look up the root name service, which we have primed into our cache. We then ask the root name servers who the AU name servers are. We then ask the AU name servers who the .com.au name servers are. We then ask the .com.au name servers who chrisleg.com.au is run by. And once we've asked that, we then ask Chris's service what is the IP address of the machine Donuts. And that's what we mean by hierarchical name resolution. And once we've done that and we've got the IP address, we're then free to go, Donuts. Well, yes, although if you're doing reverse name resolution, it doesn't quite work like that. With reverse name resolution, it's different. But, yeah. It does sort of go right to left as far as the domain names are concerned.
If it can't resolve a name to the IP address, then you get that lovely message error, not able to get. So it's not an absolute requirement you have DNS to communicate with the internet, but if you didn't, you'd have to be typing in all IP addresses instead of the host name. So, for example, it's a lot easier if you're typing in www. Than putting in, 198.133.2.
The ads, it's like, Fergie's Furniture Shop, just log on to 247.131.4.9. And obviously that wouldn't be anywhere near as good as www.fergiesfurniture.com.au. So there is value in a name.
Jingle to remember the IP address by.
Oh, they probably would. It'd be like, stuff for you, 192.138, that's great, mate, or something. Yeah, you could, but it would take longer.
All right, so for computers to operate on your land, they need to make use of your DNS services.
Shove that microphone down close to you.
Swallow it. Is that better, baby?
Can't control myself. Okay, so it's better now.
I'm not sensitive enough. Okay. Okay, so you need to put those specifications into your settings. Now we're talking about default gateways. That's not the gateway that you go into your house with, but the default gateway. When you have a computer that's located on one network segment and it's trying to talk to another computer on a different segment across a router, hello enable. It sends the data through a default gateway. So the default gateway is the near side. Oh, good idea. So your default gateway is the near side interface of the router. The default gateway is the near side interface of the router, and the default gateway is the near side interface of the router. That is in your final exam. I do remember that one. So it is on the near side interface of the router. Okay. So that's the interface on your router to which your local computer network segment is attached. So in order for each of your computers that are on able to recognize the default gateway, the corresponding near side router interface IP addresses has to be entered into your TCP/IP properties dialog box. And what was that message?
Not true. No, that's just a convention. The actual router on a lot of networks is actually the last IP address. For example, a lot of integrated routers, such as the Billions, will default to 192.168.1.254 rather than 192.168.1.1. But if you want the gateway on 174.8.31.215, you can. If you're on the same network as that gateway, it doesn't have to be the first IP. That's just a convention. You're not, Tom, kind of working again.
I'm not working. Am I working now? My goodness. Okay. Oh, this is fun, isn't it? I'll have to fix this up a bit later. Okay. Let me just check this notes. I think I've got to move on here. All right. We're talking a little bit more about topologies. Okay. So a topology... don't you love these fancy names? I know I was in class last night and listening to some incredibly long-winded thing, which just meant how this long-winded name that they'd given things had been promptly forgotten. Just to say it was a way to catalogue things. And I thought, why don't they just say this is a cataloguing process? But no.
A top-down view of an overall picture. So if you look at a topological map, you're actually looking down. And that's why they call it topology rather than how CRUD is laid out. Because it takes longer to say how CRUD is laid out, and it's easy to say topology, but also because it is a top-down view of the network devices, whereas if you look at them from side-on, you wouldn't exactly see the stars or the rings or the buses. Or at least you probably know the bus turned up when it ran over you, but apart from that, it would look different. So that's why we call it topology.
Yeah, but I like how CRUD is laid out. Sounds better.
A nasty program's wiped stuff off your hard drive. That might be completely understandable, but it's more important to sort of say something like, a rogue programmatic element has removed data from your secondary storage device. I mean, it sounds much better. And I mean, if the doctor just said you're crook and you're going to die, that'd be far less, you know, exciting than some big long medical name that you'd be able to say to your friends. So it just depends what's, you know.
So your network topology... how the CRUD's laid out defines the layout of your network. So it shows you how the devices on the network, basically how they're interconnected. As I mentioned, the devices on your network are termed as nodes. So nodes are things like your computers, your printers, your routers, bridges, and all those types of things that are attached to your network. And the different topologies influence the way your network operates. And we talked a little bit about the different types of topologies last week. Anyone want to give me some? Give me. We're getting some here. Yeah.
Hierarchical is another one that Glenn always comes up with, hierarchical, because it's the one that nobody else comes up with.
Another big word, yes. Okay, so networks can have both a physical and a logical topology. I was going to be a bit mean, but I won't. I'll restrain myself. But those two topologies can get a little confusing, because logical, in this instance, has nothing to do with the way that the network appears to be functioning. So the physical and the logical topologies of a network can both be the same. So, for instance,
if you look at a network that is connected 10 base T or 100 base T through a hub, then the network is a physical star, but it is a logical bus, because the hub sends a signal onto every thing. Yes, we'll need a note next week, Elise, I think. I'm just kidding. Ah, yes. Ah, green bottle, you're late. Anyway, let's not go there.
My suitcase, but yeah, it was a bit hectic around here, so my apologies, and I'm on deck now.
Better late than never. Welcome along.
Maybe you got the weeks confused and you thought I was away already, but I will be here for today, and what of next week we can do, depending on, you know, how my holiday goes and whether I've got time and all that.
Well, if you don't have time, we understand. No, and there will be the recordings for you to listen to on your MP3 player. So we hope you will enjoy your holiday.
Darwin now, so I can get them any time I want after they go up.
Hurrah!
How long are you away for, Elise?
Brisbane to Darwin Saturday night, and I'm back on the actual 2 weeks today. I'm back, which is what, the 27th? So about 11 days.
Hmm. Oh, that'll be nice. Nice for you, anyway.
From Darwin to Brisbane, and then straight through from Brisbane. So I'll get home about 10 o'clock in the morning. And you might find me in some vague semblance of being lucid when I attend the lecture that afternoon. But we'll see how we go.
Did you end up resolving your grief with the Toastmasters?
Not as yet. I could just quickly check, but I'll talk to you about it off lecture, but not to my knowledge at this point, no. But thanks anyway.
Okay, now I'm just going to talk a little bit about the different topologies. So, for example, a bus topology, and it's often referred to as a linear bus. So you have all the devices connected to one single cable, and it proceeds from one computer to the next. So just like a bus going along the road. So with that topology, the main cable segment needs to end with a terminator, and that terminator absorbs the signal when it reaches the end of the line. That's all right. There's things here happening.
So there you go, the terminator was at the end of the cable, okay? It is actually reflecting back along the cable, otherwise you would get a reflection, which would then cause an impedance mismatch, which would mean that you would then get crud all up and down your cable, and then you'd know where the crud was laid out, but it wouldn't do you much good. So, yeah, that's what the terminator does. It cancels the signal at the end of the cable. Skynet, yeah, I suppose it is, but it hasn't become self-aware quite yet, okay, so don't worry about it. So that's your bus topology. And one break in the cable will bring your bus network to a screaming halt, a bit like a bus strike on our network that's going to happen soon. We actually used to take the terminator off the end of... we used to take the terminator off the end of the cable on Friday afternoons because we knew that the tech person wasn't in and that the network in the lecture theatre wouldn't work. We wouldn't have to do any work. So that was kind of handy.
No, you can't do that in here, Trevor. Okay, so with the bus topology, you can only get one packet transmitted at a time, because if you get more than one packet, you're going to get collisions on the network. Not a good thing to do. And so with a bus topology, you'd only be using it for, you know, a small a small network, really, that's only got a few hosts on it. Star topology is the one of the commonly used architectures in local area networks today, and it resembles like a bicycle ring. Okay, so if you think of the central connection, and then you've got the other segments travelling off that central connection. So it's easily expandable, so you can grow your network and put more devices on there. And it filters data packets and like switches and routers, and reduces the traffic on each of the wires. Yeah, you can have more hubs if you want.
3-4-5 rule in CCNA, and I'll just keep crudding on while Geraldine has some of her Diet Coke. Crud, crud, crud. You can have five. I do. You can have five segments. Five segments all up. You can have three repeaters. I don't know whether it's 5-4-3. Oh yeah, one repeated segment. I can't remember what the two is. And then you've got the five segments, three containing workstations and four containing repeaters and hubs. That's right. So there you go. That's the 5-4-3-2.
On that in the exam too. Okay. Yeah, I remember that one. So it's got all these different numbers, and you have to decide which one is correct, so you need to know which the rule is. Okay, ring topology, it's also a fairly important topology for local area networks, and as it implies, you've got a your hosts, and they're all connected in a circle or a ring. So it has no beginning, it has no end, and on that ring net you will depend.
There you go.
Okay, so you have data that's differently transmitted. So it's you have a frame called a token, and that token travels around the ring, and then it stops at each of the nodes. If you have a node then that wants to transmit data, it adds that data and all the addressing information to that particular frame, and then the frame goes on around the ring until it gets to the next node, and does the same until it gets to the destination node. And when it gets there, the data is taken out of the frame. The good thing about this type of topology is that you don't have problems with collisions of your data packets. So it's quite mesh topology, connects all of your devices or your nodes to each other. And it allows for redundancy and fault tolerance. And it's used in wide area networks to interconnect local area, and often used in big agencies like government. And it's also expensive, so that's a disadvantage, and it's difficult to implement. Topology is a hybrid topology, and a hybrid just means that it's got more than one. It's mixed, and it's got more than one type of topology. When you have like a bus line joins two hubs, different topologies, then the configuration is called a star bus. So it's sort of mixed.
Is your microphone, has Skype smashed? Have you still got Skype open, Geraldine?
No.
Been smashed down, because I think it's just on the border of your sensitivity.
All right, well, while I do that, you might like to talk about some cable types, and I'll do that now.
Way up there. Okay, cable types, we have thin coaxial cable, which is 50-ohm coaxial cable. I believe it's RG58, if my memory serves me correctly. Yes, Trevor would have some of that. We tie him up with it when he misbehaves. It's 50-ohm coax cables, 50-ohm terminators, T-pieces and BNC connectors. And they go onto little... You put a T-piece onto the network card and then you screw the...
ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Chris. You're right to...
My levels are all right up, Kerry. So it's interesting. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, sorry, did you want to say something, Chris?
Yeah, sorry about the lag. You're talking about the token rings or the ring topology, say if the ring's broken, then the whole network is stuffed, really. I'm not sure if you cover it in this class or in this course at all, but there is also the double ring, which includes having one token going in the other direction. So essentially you've got two rings. And when you draw that on the topology, it actually makes a nice donut shape, and I like to call it the donut topology.
Donuts.
Lecture in the Thursday chats folder. Yes, Ed covers that in excruciating detail. Yes, you can have a dual ring topology, but there are no questions on token ring in the exam, so we don't concentrate on it too much.
No. Have you got me now? Okay. We're talking about different types of cable. Carrie started to tell us about, we'll also be talking about things like different types of media like copper, coaxial, twisted pair, glass fibre optic and wireless. So we're going to be talking about a few different things like that. Two grades of cable for each type of media, such as coaxial, twisted pair and fibre optic. And first of all, we come across is plenum. And the word plenum just refers to the space where you have like a false ceiling and the floor above it in a building. So you have the network cabling that is laid in the space. So when it is laid there, it needs to be a fire retardant cable. So plenum grade cable, we refer to just as plenum cable, it refers to a cable with an outer jacket that's made of Teflon. Generally Teflon, it can be other materials, but it needs to comply with fire and building codes. Another type was PVC, where you've got the outer jacket of non-plenum grade cables, and it's made with PVC or polyvinyl chloride. So it's a less expensive cable, and it's doesn't meet a lot of the safety codes, though, for installations in that area above the ceiling. And also PVC, if it burns, so you have a fire there, it gives off poisonous gas. So, not one you'd be using unless you really had to. Okay, twisted pair is a type of cabling that's used for things like your telephone and also for most of your modern Ethernet networks. You have a pair of wires that form a circuit, and that circuit allows the transmission of data. These are actually twisted so that you you have hopefully prevent crosstalk, and that's just referring to sort of noise that's generated by adjacent pairs. The pairs of copper cables are then encased in a colour-coded plastic insulation, and they are then together. You then have all of the twisted pairs inside, protected inside. Two different types of twisted pair. There's shielded twisted pair, or STP, and unshielded twisted pair, which is UTP. So with your unshielded twisted pair, the cable is used in a number of networks. It's got two or four pairs of wires, and the type of cable is on the cancellation effect by that you get, so that cancellation effects limits the amount of signal degradation that you get from electromagnetic interference and also from radio frequency interference. And it's UTP is the most commonly used cable in Ethernet networks. Shielded twisted pair cable combines cancellation and the twisting of wires with shielding, as it sounds, STP. So in that case, each pair of your wires is wrapped in a metallic foil, and that provides further shielding from noise. And then the four pairs of the wires are then wrapped in an overall metallic braid or foil. And with STP, it reduces your electrical noise, both within the cable, and again, we're talking about crosstalk, and also from, so crosstalk's from within the cable, and from outside the cable, the interference form of electromagnetic interference. STB prevents more interference than does UTP, but it's also more expensive. Sorry, I'm missing that. What was that? More weight. Oh, yeah, more thick and more weight. Yeah. So it's more difficult to install and it's more expensive. And also the metallic shielding that you have needs to be grounded at both ends. And if it's not grounded properly, it'll pick up, just like picking up unwanted signals. It's a common... Am I back?
There we go.
Okay. I've just about got to swallow the microphone. So if I swallow the microphone, yeah, I'm not sensitive enough. Or I'm too sensitive, whatever. I'll... Oh, yeah, okay, so I'll just keep swallowing this microphone, okay? okay, so as I say, most of the networks that we have now, though, use UTP cable. At the connector on the end of the cable is known as the RJ45 connector. And we're all aware of those when we're connecting our Ethernet cable to our computers. That is an RJ45 connector. They've got a tunker on the end. Yeah, that's right. okay, there are a number of different categories, and I'm going to let Kerry talk a little bit about the categories for a second while I have another little drink.
Oh, she wakes me up. I was just about to go to sleep next to the guide dog there. Okay, we have various categories of cable. We have Category 3 cable, which is the category that is required to carry 10 megabits of Ethernet data per second. It is four wires, actually, or the full thing is actually four pairs, but there are actually two wires used for network use and two used for telephone use. Then we have Category 4 and we have Category 5. Category 5 is what you require for 100 megabit per second Ethernet. It has four pairs of two wires in each pair, although for 10 base 5 you...
That was 5E and 6 are popular from Prakash.
I'm not interested in what's popular yet, Prakash. We're still doing a history lesson. 5 is 100 megabit Ethernet. 5E is what is required for gigabit Ethernet, and 6 is also a tighter specification. The difference between 5E and 6 is that 6 has a separator plastic jacket in it, and that keeps all of the pairs separated and away from each other. Cables that would pass the 5E tolerances would then pass the 6 tolerance if they had the separator put in the middle, and they can be tested on a modern cable tester, which none of us can afford anyway, which is why you pay the cable company. Reason people put 5E and 6 in because people do make want gigabit to the desktop, although it has been proven that running gigabit to the desktop is usually a pointless waste of time, and you can get far more network efficiency by running gigabit in the server farm and running 100 megabit to the desktop with some good quality switches. You don't necessarily want to be running gigabit to the desktop. Just got to open my chat window again.
We briefly mentioned fibre optic cable, and that's a networking cable that's capable of getting modulated light transmissions. When you modulate light, it's to manipulate that light so that it travels in the way that it transmits the data. So when you're talking about fibre optic, we're referring to cabling that has a core of strands of glass or plastic, and it has that instead of copper, and the light travels pulses through that cabling. The speed and throughput of fibre optic is about 100 plus megabits advantage. It is fairly expensive, it's, you know, really in labour and also in your material costs. Some of the advantages of it is it's not as susceptible to EMI or to radio frequency interference. It also can be used for longer distances, and you don't need to ground the cable. And it's got higher data rates than does copper. Your single mode maximum cable length for fibre...
Oh, you're fading down again.
I'm moved away, sorry.
level with your mic, because they're very noise-cancelling microphones. Like, if I actually turn mine properly, so you'll see I get louder.
How's that? Okay. All right, so wireless networks now is, and most of us have probably got them. I've got a good one now. Oh. And it's an alternative way, yeah, for connecting a local area network. Yeah, it's going really, really well now with my UltraWAP. Okay, and... exactly. Okay, so wireless networks use electromagnetic waves, such as radio frequency, laser, infrared and satellite microwaves to carry signals from one computer to another without a permanent cable connection. And since you don't have a physical medium there for the network, it's obviously very versatile if you haven't got brick walls in between. And also for mobile use. And it's lovely to be able to take your little laptop in wherever you want to go in the house. So some of your mobile devices would include things like you know, when you're commuting or, you know, when you want to get on an aeroplane, if you're lucky enough, those type of things. So at the core of wireless communication, you have devices that we refer to as transmitters. And also, when you have transmitters, you've got to have receivers. So the source interacts with the transmitter, and it converts the data to electromagnetic waves, and then they are received by the receiver. And then the receiver converts the electromagnetic waves back into data for the destination. So you've got a two-way communication, and each device needs a transmitter and a receiver. Okay, so a lot of the manufacturers of network devices these days build the transmitter and receiver into a signal unit, and it's called a transceiver or a wireless network card. So you've got to have all of your devices in your local area network or your wide area network need to have an appropriate wireless network card. Okay, and we talked about those before. The two most common wireless technologies that we come across are IR and RF. IR has its weaknesses. For example, workstations and also digital devices need to be in line of sight. So with infrared, it has to be in line of sight. Ever tried to use your remote with the dog in front of it? I've had that in my lounge room, realised the dog's standing there. So you have to tell the dog to sit down so he can get it to work. So infrared, that's one of its drawbacks. Okay, so infrared, where you've got, it's okay when you've got all your digital devices that are in one room, I guess, but if the dog gets in the way, you're in trouble. It's also easily installed, and but you can get obstruction, as I say, by dogs. Okay, so for RF technology, that allows devices to be in different rooms or even another building, and the limited range of the radio signals, though, still is restricted, and it can be used on a single or on multiple frequencies. When you've got single radio frequency, though, you can get it interference. All right. Also, if it's easily eavesdroppable if you're on single frequency. So, when you have a spread spectrum, though, you avoid the problem of insecure data transmission because you're using multiple frequency. So it increases immunity to noise, and so therefore it makes it difficult for people outside to intercept your transmission. Two approaches that are currently being used to implement spread spectrum for WLAN transmissions, and they are frequency hopping spread spectrum, try saying that 10 times fast, or FHSS, or direct sequence spread spectrum, or DSSS. It's not you snoring in the background. Okay, I'm just Scrolling right along. Okay, the number of devices that you get, and they're connected to make up a local area network, and so we refer to those as local area network hardware. Things like repeaters, hubs, switches, all those types of thing. With a repeater, it receives the signal, it then regenerates it or repeats it, and then passes it on. So used towards the edges of networks and to extend the wire so more of your workstations can be added. Hubs are actually multi-port repeaters, and if you're using a hub, it changes your network topology from a linear bus, so that's where you've got each device plugging directly into a wire to star. So with hubs, the data arriving over the cables to a hub port is then electrically repeated on all of the other ports that are connected to the same Ethernet local area network, except for the port on which the data was received. You have three basic types of hubs. You have a passive hub, that's like me, little passive person. And the passive hub serves as a physical connection point. That's a wicked laugh, Elise. So it doesn't manipulate the traffic that it crosses it, and it doesn't boost or clean the signal. So a passive hub is used only to share the physical media. So it doesn't actually... When you have an active hub, though, it needs to be plugged into a local... into a local area network, into an electrical outlet. And it needs that power to amplify the incoming signal, and it then passes it back out to the other ports. I know you're all going to be this type of hub. Intelligent hubs, or smart hubs, and they basically function as active hubs, but they also include a microprocessor chip, so they've got diagnostic capability. Obviously, because of that, they're more expensive than just an active hub, but they're good if you want to troubleshoot. Yeah, we're all little lint. Okay, so when we're talking about hubs, you've got all devices attached to a hub, and they all hit, so they have one collision, single collision domain. And if we're talking about that, a collision is a situation where you've got two ends that send data over the network wire at the same time, and they go boom in the middle, so you've got a collision. Sometimes also hubs we refer to as concentrators, and that's because they serve as a central connection point for your Ethernet LAN. Hubs operate at the physical layer of the OSI model. Hubs operate at the physical layer of the OSI. And hubs operate at the physical layer of the OSI model. You need to know that. Okay. Sometimes you need to break up a local area network into smaller or more easily managed segments, and that'll decrease the amount of traffic that you've got on your single local area network, and also extend your geographical area past what a single local area network. The devices that you can get that are used to connect your network segments together include bridges, so they sound, they act like a bridge, switches, routers, and gateways. Switches and bridges operate at the data link of the OSI model. That is the data link of the OSI model. Okay, please make sure you learn all these, what layer they operate at, because there are questions in the exams about them. Okay, so the function of the bridge, as it sounds, it acts like a bridge and makes intelligent decisions about whether it's going to pass signals onto the next segment of your network. Okay, when you have a bridge seeing a frame on the network, it will look at the destination MAC address, and it'll compare that to the forwarding table, and it'll then determine whether to filter, flood, or copy the frame onto another segment. Okay, so if you had a destination device and it's on the same segment as the frame, the bridge would block the frame from going on to other segments. And if it does that, we refer to that as filtering. If, for example, though, you've got the destination device is on a different segment, then the bridge would forward the frame to the appropriate segment. If you had a destination address and it was unknown to the bridge would then forward the frame to all the segments except the one on which it was received. And that's referred to as flooding. So bridges can help improve your network performance. And when we talk about switches, we refer to those as multi-port bridges. So while you've got a typical bridge having two ports linking your two network segments, you on a switch you can have multiple ports depending on how many network segments you need to be linked. Okay. So they're similar, but the switch is a more much more sophisticated type of device than is a bridge. So with the switch, we've got some beauties here. They've got a lot of ports, and they've got a lot of network segments that can be connected to them. So the switch will choose the port to which the destination device or workstation is connected. Hello, Ruby. The switches further help segment your network and also reduce your network traffic congestion by limiting each port to its own collision domain. As I said to you before, the collisions, when you have a collision on network, it's when you get the packet that's been sent over the network. And that'll usually happen when there's more than one device attempting to send a particular packet at a particular time. And that results in corrupt messages and also in excess bandwidth being used. So for that reason, it's important that all your networks implement devices to reduce the collisions. We refer to it as a collision domain because only the devices that are in the domain that are actually transmitting packets can actually be involved in a collision. So they won't interfere with any other device that is transmitting on another segment of your network. A switch that is capable of making each port its own collision domain can conserve your network resources by limiting only the device connected to that port to its own collision domain. And that reduces your interference and also reduces interference from other devices that are transmitting packets at that particular time. So although you can have a switch that can segment a network into multiple collision domains, it can't actually segment the network into separate broadcast domains. A broadcast domain is just something that occurs when your network is segmented into multiple parts and you have no broadcast traffic permitted to go across the segments. Routers are your most sophisticated internet working device, and they operate at the network layer of the OSI model. What layer do routers work at, folks? Thank you, Trevor. Network layer, that's right. So they're slower than bridges and thank you, yeah, we got that here too, that's good. So they're slower than bridges and switches, and they make smart decisions on how to route your packets that are received on one port to a network onto another port. They're capable, therefore, of segmenting your network and into multiple collision domains as well into multiple broadcast domain. So a broadcast domain is just a logical area in a computer network where any computer that's connected to the computer network can directly transmit to any other domain without having to go through the routing device. So it's an area basically of your computer network that's made up of all your computers and also all of your networking devices that are able to be reached by sending a frame to the data link layer. So each port to which the network segment is attached is then described as a router interface. And a router can be a computer with a software installed or they can be other devices that are built by the administrator or equipment manufacturers. And they've got tables of network addresses and destination routes to other network. Okay, so we're pretty much at the end of that module, so you know, need to sort of really make sure in this module that you know all of your different layers of protocols, I should say, and also know your OSI model inside out and back to front, because if you don't know it now, you're going to keep more and more and more and more on it. Next week we're going to be talking more about TCP/IP, and we'll be going into that in quite a lot of detail. But now I'm going to give you a quiz, and you thought you were going to get away with it, didn't you? Just sing for a second while I grab the quiz.
La la la, I am struggling over here though.
Okay, well we're nearly at the end, Kerry. I've just got to get through the quiz now.
Kerry is A, asleep, B, comatose, C, not paying attention, or D, not mentally present.
Or all of the above.
D. So have we got our chat windows open and our fingers ready to type? And we will start with question one. Okay, question one is, what is a plenum grade cable? Is it A, the highest quality cable used in networking, B, cable that has an outer jacket made of PVC that complies with fire codes, or C, cable with an outer jacket made of Teflon that complies with fire codes, or D, inexpensive cable that can be used in outdoor spaces? Go now. Ah, good. That's correct. Yes, C. It's got an outer jacket of Teflon and it complies with fire codes. Okay, question two. What is a major advantage of ring topology? Is it A, no collisions? B, there is more bandwidth? C, easy to add another node to the network without interruption? Or D, wire access is not shared? And the advantage, major advantage, was that it doesn't have collisions. So for those who got C, you're wrong. There are no collisions in a ring topology. Okay. It wouldn't be easy to add another node, which was what people were saying with C, because you'd be interrupting the network. I wouldn't say so. That's right.
Option, even if it is a dual ring topology. So C is wrong. I was just going to make one more point before I drift off back to sleep here. with token ring, it's not very popular. Unless we're talking FDDI, which we're not, nobody installs a ring network in 2008 unless it's FDDI. So, ring, boring, yawn, it's only used for very specialised installation. Ethernet has just left it in the gutter. As far as ring networks are concerned, Ethernet is the way to go. So, and FDDI isn't even that popular due to cost. So, yeah, so there you go.
That was me, sorry I knocked that. Okay, question three. Which of the following can't be assigned by a DHCP server? Is A, an IP address? B, a subnet mask. C, default gateway. D, DNS server address. Or E, the MAC address. Hang on, I haven't finished yet. For those that said E, you are correct. For those that said A, you're not. DHCP can't, because the question was, which of the following can't be assigned by a DHCP server? So IP address would be wrong. Okay. Yep.
It make rushy little errors like that one. So there you go. But E's the one we want.
It's a little bit harder when you're actually listening to the question and having to respond straight away than when you can actually read it. But I would encourage you, when you do your exams, please do read and reread, because if you had a question like that, which of the following can't be assigned by a DHCP server, and you thought they were talking about which of the following can, then, you know, you could make a silly mistake. No, it doesn't. Yeah. It's really easy to do. And it's one of the reasons I don't actually like doing multiple choice questions. Because you're either wrong or you're right. And also the other thing with them too. Yeah. And also too...
For every module exam, you'd have to mark all the essays, and I don't think you'd enjoy that.
Yeah, well, that's true, but yeah. You know what I'm getting at, though. You know, that's the, you're either wrong or you're right, and there can be answers that are very similar, but one's more correct than the other, so that's why. That's my little beef for the day. Okay, next question, question four. Which operating system feature...
We've lost her.
Dropped out. Which operating system feature allows an operating system to assign an IP address to itself whenever a DHCP server is not available? I think we just typed the answer into chat, people. It's got an A on the end of the PIPA, Eddie, otherwise it comes from home and away. APIPA, a PIPA. No, you're not. Have you got a flaky microphone connection there or something, possibly? No, once I've got a fish. No, they can't hear you at all.
Oh, I think she's gone.
She'll be back soon. We don't know what's going on with her microphone. It's really gone really weird. She's been disconnected, and she's singing.
And I say hi. And she's back. This is really interesting, actually, you know, sort of suddenly disappear and come back. Okay. Are we reading now, folks? Yes?
IPA.
Okay. Question whatever. What is used to translate host names into their corresponding IP address? Is it A, DNS, B, DHCP, C, ARP, or D, a PIPA? Yep, you're all right, DNS or A. Okay, that's good. Okay, question one. Which of the following best describes the function of a subnet mask? A, it is used with DNS for name to address resolution. B, it is used to segment the network address. C, it is required for DHCP. Or D, it is required for a PIPA to function efficiently. Well done. It was B, used to segment the network address. Okay, question, and I've lost numbers, but anyway, which of the following best describes a default gateway? A, it is the address of the near side interface on a router. B, it is the address of the last port on a switch. C, it is the address of the last interface on a bridge. Or D, it is the address of the near side interface on a hub. Well done. Yes, you're correct. If you hadn't got that right, I would have given you a cyber smack. Because I repeated it about 10 times, I think. Okay. Oh, this is an interesting question. Joshua, that's my son's name, was designing a new local area network for his medium-sized motorcycle manufacturing company. Okay, I'll try and say it again. Joshua, at the Battle of Jericho, was designing a new local area network connection for his medium-sized motorcycle manufacturing company. Which network components could he pick to divide his local area network to isolate network traffic? Could he use A, an intelligent hub? Yes or no?
No, an intelligent hub is not correct, because an intelligent hub is a switch.
Right.
Is B, a router? Yes, he could use a router. Could he use a repeater?
Yeah, just thought I'd get that joke in there.
Yes, you're correct, it is no. Could he use a passive hub? Gee, they've been listening today, that's good. Could you use a bridge? Yes, you could use a bridge. Okay. All right, and last but not least, which of the following is an invalid IP address? So what I'll do is I'll read each one and say, is it valid? Okay. First one is 24.88.12.9. Valid or invalid? Yep. Okay. Next one. 204.88.198.7. Okay, another couple. 152.47.155.248. Yep, good. Okay, and the next one. 192.23.11.258. Excellent. It is invalid, that's correct. Okay, that's it, folks. You did very well. Any questions anyone's got?
Because I missed the beginning of it. I'm assuming this is Module 2, or is it Module 3?
Module 3.
No other questions, anyone?
I'll see if I can slip in a few more worksheets and a couple of module exams before I go away.
Yeah, that'd be good. Just to let you know, of all those people that have been sending me in worksheets, thank you for doing them as you're going along. That's good. And I will be marking them, so don't despair. I've got them, and I will get back to you. I've got quite a few to mark, that's all. So, do you have anything else to say, Kerry?
Bridging Discovery on Friday, and we'll all look forward to that on Friday. So, yeah.
Thank you all for your good participation today. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. happy birthday, dear Elise. Happy birthday to you. Got to fit in a cake first. Oh dear. All right, folks, we'll have a lovely couple of days and we'll talk to you on Friday.
Where about?
What sort of treat do we want? Oh, birthday treat. Ah, yeah. What are you going to have as a birthday treat, Elise?
Yeah, it's a big treat. I was going to say, what do I have to do? Do I have to provide a cake for it? Well, we have virtual birthday cake. Oh, dear. I might be getting the lecture down and sitting on the plane from Darwin to Brisbane or something and listening to it on my MP3 player if Kerry's got it there before I go.
Okay, Ruby, we'll cyber some cake over to you.
Mud cake's my thing.
Cake download, okay, good.
Cake, which is a really big donut, and it's really good. It's got cream and jam and everything.
I bought this nice decadent donut yesterday for lunch.
OSI reference model.
I say we'll have a big cyber party at the end of this year. What do you reckon, everyone? By and able. We shall, yeah. We'll have
an... It's only Elise that has a birthday on Friday. We're all the rest of us are here as normal. Well, as normal as we ever are.
I was just going to say that. We'll be here anyway. All right, folks, I think we'll probably sign off the SN. We'll be available on Skype, so have a good one.
Thank you very much.